All right, everyone, welcome to our DevOps office hours. It's May 19th, 2021. My name is Eric Osterman, and I'll be leading the conversation. I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator, and that means that we help companies own their infrastructure in record time by building it together with your team while showing them the ropes. So if that sounds interesting, head over to cloudposse.com/quiz to get started. Again, that's cloudposse.com/quiz. To get started. For those of you new to the call, the format's very informal. My goal is to get your questions answered. So feel free to unmute yourself at any time if you want to jump in and participate. If you're tuning in from our podcast or YouTube channel, you can register for these live and interactive sessions by heading over to cloudposse.com/office hours. We host these calls every week. We'll automatically post a video recording of this session to our YouTube channel. So if you enjoy this content and want to support it, please hit those like and subscribe buttons. It helps us a great deal. We'll also follow up with an email that you can share with your team. So with that said, let's kick it off. Got a number of announcements. Some of these were inspired by Anton's newsletter. That's pretty cool. So Anton, if you want to post the link to your newsletter in the Office Hours channel or in the Zoom chat so others can subscribe, that'd be cool. One of the things that I thought was good about one of the announcements was basically this one on the Terraform plan remote execution. This is my complaint with Atlantis for years, and it was never addressed. I don't even think to this day. We opened a pull request for it like 2 years ago. And the problem is that in Terraform, even a plan can do absolutely anything you want it to, because a plan can call a Terraform provider, and anyone can write a Terraform provider. And it used to be hard to call third-party Terraform providers, but not anymore. Now with the Terraform provider registry, it's super trivial for anyone, including Cloud Posse, as we're doing, publishing Terraform providers. So as they go through in this post here, they show just how easy it is to exfiltrate those AWS credentials with a nefarious provider. So like, how do you get around this? Well, I guess you prevent the usage of unvetted providers, but off the top of my head, I don't know how one can do that. Like there should be a dot file or something in Terraform that specifies which providers you accept, and that any provider not in that file won't. Yeah, but then even in pull requests, it would help. I don't know. What is the fix for this? Matt, Callum, Anton?
Well, I know one fix which can be helpful, and from what I talk to people, they also use it already. So if you are worked on this on the developer machine, if you execute Terraform on developer machine, you can use pre-commit hooks to make sure that there is no such code inside of your TF files. Literally using grep by certain regular expression. Of course, it's very bad by all definitions, but this is what I've been using myself.
No, it's a really good point. So really what we're talking about is shift left. In the CI pipeline, before you do any Terraform, anything, there needs to be a step that does some static analysis, make sure that everything is what you want it. Does TFSec let you restrict, for example, the providers out of the box?
I don't know.
I don't think it does.
Yeah. But yeah, it's basically a policy-driven approach would be the way to do this. I wonder if Spacelift lets you do that.
I wonder if using a lock file probably has some implications here. Because if you explicitly have your providers listed that you want to use in your Terraform lock file, and that's committed, and it can't find, well, I guess in theory, it shouldn't be able to then just download an arbitrary provider that you haven't already sort of quote unquote whitelisted by putting it in your lock.
Whatever that provider is you whitelisted, you have to be checking against the default branch, name, master, or whatever.
Yeah. You know, my favorite issue with all of this thing, which I've been worried for quite a long time, even when I was working on serverless TF a year ago, is archive provider has data source archive file, which will create file even when you run Terraform plan.
That's
exactly when I don't need a file yet. Yeah. All I want to do is just to see plan, and then I will decide whether to make archive to upload it to Lambda or not.
Yeah. So this is where a bad actor could then change the location of where that file is and override some critical
thing. Yep.
Yeah. No, it's a brave new world, and that's the one we're in. I mean, let's not mention that we're just running random Docker containers these days. I mean, we're all guilty of that.
Well, but funny thing related to stealing credentials is something what can happen, and I'm sure that there are still some CI platforms in the wild where you have shared access to some, let's say, Jenkins, right? So Jenkins can execute some code. And what you have to do is that you have to put a simple like null resource or provisioner or exact, and simply send all of your environment variables somewhere.
Yeah.
Has happened. I mean, this can be abused still in some of CI systems out there right now.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, even in Atlantis, my biggest pain point with Atlantis. I'll find the issue here, but
I think it is also documented somewhere inside of Atlantis that be careful that your credentials can be leaked. So make sure that you execute only from certain people. And
this was the issue I opened up in 2018, and it talks about it. All right, next announcement. This was really cool. And to be honest, I got this one also from your newsletter, Anton. So the ability that you can now set tags at the provider level so that when infrastructure is provisioned, these will automatically be populated. Now, Cloud Posse has, you know, our Terraform null label, and we use that religiously everywhere. And that works pretty well to enforce tag conventions. But this is a complementary thing that I think we're probably going to do. And obviously, since providers belong in your root modules, what we call components, this is probably best practice then to start populating these. And I assume support interpolations.
Only from static values.
Right, that's the problem. You can't use a variable in there. That's what I was about to say.
Well, no, you can use variables probably, but you cannot use dynamic values from resources or from unknown.
Yeah.
So we could use our module.context.tags, in other words.
Right.
No, so I'm using variables, but like you have to pass them in as an environment variable, like before your Terraform runs.
Yeah.
I also was really excited. As soon as it got released, I used it, and then I hit a bug. And it, like, broke all my stuff. But the ECS service in the GovCloud partition, it tries to add tags to, but in GovCloud, you can't tag an ECS service. So it just craps out.
Yeah, I guess that'll be another 6 months to a year before it hits GovCloud.
One thing which you have to understand is that now when you have tags inside of default tags inside of provider, you will have to do some changes inside of your resources tags as well. Otherwise, it will always be infinite loop. Like default tags will always find something new, and it will try to reapply it every time you plan. So you need to move tags from resources into default tags and don't have overlap inside
you
of.
You can't have any duplicates.
Yeah.
Is there a way to introspect what the default tags are so we can remove them?
Yeah, you can merge. You just do tags.merge, then the defaults first, and then the other one second, and then that will work.
Oh, you're okay. I misunderstood. If you're also you're saying that if you're also passing tags to the resource that don't include the default tags, then you will be playing this. You'll always have different changes. Is that the interpretation? My original interpretation was when you set your tags, they should be mutually exclusive with the default tags.
No, the problem will be that if you specify one key inside of default tags and inside of resource tag itself, then it will be infinite loop. So every time Terraform apply will tell that, hey, I need to apply it, and it will apply the same changes all over.
Yeah, I think that's why I was suggesting if you use a merge, it will handle that scenario, and you just list the defaults as the first key in your merge, and then the override tags as the second key. But you should never just say tags equals environment, you know, or tags equals environment equals test, or environment equals foo in your resource, because then you'll have that problem that Anton just mentioned, that there'll always be a change.
Yeah, so like this example, they have name only inside of resources, which is correct. But if they would put name tag into default tags, then it would be always trying to use that tag, and it will just conflict every time.
What if I had exactly project test and I put project test here, exactly the same? Would that also do it, or that wouldn't be a problem?
Exactly is allowed.
Yeah, that makes sense then to me. I got you. Okay. Yeah.
But as a best practice, if you're using default tags, you should always use merge, basically, and then you won't run into any wacky problems.
And can you access provider.default tags as a property?
Yeah, I think.
Well, I don't think so, because it's so early on. It should, yeah.
No, I think I saw that actually.
But I'm quite sure that we have to wait for a few months at least for everything around tags to be settled, because now we have issues, as someone mentioned, with Gov Cloud. I'm sure there are also other resources which are not well supported, and
yeah,
it's always like that.
All right, well, that's cool. The next announcement, I saw it posted in a few places, is this App Runner release, which is probably Amazon's response to Google Cloud Run, attempting to make it trivial to deploy a containerized service, among other things, in a serverless kind of fashion. I have to say, I'm not holding my breath. Amazon stuff never seems just that easy to me. I think that was kind of the hope with Fargate, and anybody who's worked with Fargate, it's very expressive in order to deploy anything with Terraform and Fargate. Container runtimes and Lambda, still not trivial. What have they done to make this absolutely trivial? I don't know. It's supposed to manage the load balancer connection, auto scaling, cool. Anybody kick the tires? Is this truly that easy?
Well, it's so funny. If you look into this issue, this service already have a public roadmap, and issue number one is already, I think, about 150 upvotes. And the issue is, hey, I want to use service deployed in private subnet. So it's not supported.
Oh my God.
Yes. So there are a lot of things which are not supported yet. And we had a discussion with AWS Heroes earlier today, and pretty much none of us understand why we need this or when do we need this. Because Fargate is inside, it is pretty much official information, and as you say.
They have a service complimentary named Run something, so that they can say they have an analogous service to Google Cloud Run. That's my
argument. And don't forget New Shiny.
I think that they don't support to use your own certificate. So if you want to create a CNAME to point the endpoint to your domain, you are going to have issues with the certificate. The SSL certificate.
So is the idea that you have to put something like CloudFront in front of it, or?
I don't think that's supporting it yet.
Well, same as with API gateways or Amplify. Every time when you want to do a little bit more than they planned, you need to implement it yourself, pretty much. Okay.
So back to the Pareto principle, the 80-20. Spend 80% more effort than trying to do that small incremental 20% improvement. All right. Well, that was interesting. If anybody ends up kicking the tires on that, please speak up one of these office hours. It'd be cool to hear. I thought this one was kind of funny. These security researchers have been, combing over the various ransomware software, and there's basically a implicit pact amongst the ransomware peddlers that, hey, don't attack other Eastern European countries because we don't want to incur the wrath of the government or control or things like that. So the simple thing that they do is they check for the input language on the keyboard, and if it's Cyrillic or if it's Russian or some of the other languages there, Armenian, it won't execute the payload. So one way to get around some of these ransomware attacks, if you're in a pinch, is change the input format on the keyboard. I wonder how much longer that'll be the case. Anybody following this whole Colonial Pipeline ransomware hack? Took out the pipeline. Actually, they didn't take out the pipeline. It took out their accounting system. So the pipeline was fine and unaffected. They were afraid they weren't going to be able to bill for it. And that's apparently why they shut down the entire system. And ultimately, the $4 million ransom was paid. I mean, or was it $5 million? Other announcements?
$4.4.
Wait, is that on today's Bitcoin dollar or yesterday's Bitcoin dollar?
I don't know.
And Dependabot, after like 2 years, or I don't know, feels like it, finally has come out with HCL2 support, albeit only for public dependencies. So you can't use Dependabot to automatically update private registry versions or private GitHub module versions. For those of you not using Dependabot yet, Dependabot was a small third-party startup. They were acquired by GitHub. Seems like the founder is actually still around and at GitHub because he's personally responding to a lot of these GitHub issues. But Dependabot is a pretty cool way to automatically update your Terraform dependencies, especially if you have some automated testing in place where Dependabot will open up a PR against your repo with the module versions updated, and it'll update one module, I believe, at a time, so you can systematically upgrade your infrastructure and keep it current.
I wonder about Dependabot. You guys used Dependabot before, right? I mean,
Up and we moved to RenovateBot. And RenovateBot just seems to be moving so much faster.
Yeah, it does. But the cool part in Dependabot is that it has more documentation, it seems.
Yeah. And you don't have to pay for it. I use a RenovateBot. I guess we're not.
Dependabot costs money?
RenovateBot?
No, Dependabot.
Dependabot is free by GitHub. But RenovateBot is a third party service that we're using. We use RenovateBot and Mergify together.
Which one do you know? Do you know if any of those work well with TerraGrant?
Don't know, but with somebody just posted that RenovateBot now supports TerraGrant as of very recently.
Yeah. And it's quite funny that the only piece of code which I found was from Jim somewhere, like literally 20 lines of code on the whole GitHub.
Then he contributed to RenovateBot.
So I'm a little bit unsure where to even start because there is no documentation which I can copy paste or nothing.
Yeah.
So they say that, yes, we support TerraGrant, but how to do, like what to even write?
Well, my guess is Jim is pretty accessible. So maybe DM him or talk to Matt Calhoun. He might have.
I was wondering if the other, there's Dependabot, and the, what's the other one?
A RenovateBot.
If RenovateBot does the same thing as NPM audit for node modules, Dependabot doesn't do that. So what happened is you have a dependency list, and one of those modules might have a security vulnerability or something like that. So that'll get flagged. But what if that module is fine or something like that, but it has a dependency which has a security flag? Dependabot won't find that. But if you do an NPM audit, it will go through and spider through all the dependencies of the dependencies of the dependencies and flag all the dependencies down under that might have a security vulnerability.
Highly, highly doubt that. Also, I don't know of any vendor maintaining a list of like bad Terraform modules and versions and SHAs and stuff like that. Anybody know about that? Any vendor doing that? Yeah.
I mean, it's quite funny that you mentioned this thing. Earlier last week, a person approached me and asked, what will happen to Terraform AWS module if I decide to delete the module, let's say from the registry? And
it was quite Terraformers will go up and...
Yeah, and I said, I have no clue what's going to happen, but if I would be HashiCorp, I would probably implement at least some sort of cache mechanism somewhere.
Seriously. Yeah. I think they should have this is one of the things I don't like with the current implementation of the registry. And I'm sure there are good reasons for it, but I really don't believe it should a module, a version should ever be able to change commit SHA ever. So we can use versions for pinning and trust that it's not going to change from underneath us.
But it still doesn't prevent you from deleting the whole organization or repository.
Exactly. I mean, this was just, it's similar in the sense that I think that they would have to cache the version that was there. But two is that, I think that there should be a permanent record of every module that they keep in the registry. And we can put our trust into HashiCorp at least instead of
That actually makes a lot of sense. I'm wondering too, if by not doing that, if there'll be a violation of different like SOX compliance or whatever by using that registry instead of a private registry, because if the SHAs can change, then that means someone can inject something that's insecure with the new SHA for the same version.
Yeah.
We are coming to the same problem which we had with providers, and now we have Terraform lock for providers. At some point, we will have the same Terraform module.lock.
I think it is planned, though. I think they just haven't come to it yet.
Well, for the last 2 or 3 years, at least.
Yeah. I give them benefit of the doubt. The log file finally did come out for providers. Hopefully they'll augment that before 1.0. But this is the other thing that gives me the EBGBs about GitHub Actions. And GitHub Actions have the same problem. And I just wish that, there was a way that you can trust tags and trust versions without having to use.
I mean, you can if you
use the SHA.
I was gonna say, go look up what the SHA is for the version, and then use that in your in your modules, in your specification for it.
Yeah, and then it's just like, well, let's just give up on Semver. Yeah, it was nice knowing you, Semver.
Well, the problem is that they make, until GitHub makes tags immutable, like no one that depends on GitHub is going to be able to fix this problem.
Yeah, well, or
that's the problem, right? Because all they're doing under the hood is calling GitHub and saying, give me the code that exists at this tag, and that tag is mutable at that point, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
But
it'd be nice if that was an organization feature.
Is it Ruby gems I'm thinking of? Like when you push a gem, you can't ever push a new gem with the same version. It's kind of that concept that I would like to see.
Yeah, that if GitHub fixed it, like seriously, with just like a toggle switch for your organization or repository that says like allow, you know, or don't allow mutable tags or whatever, this whole problem would go away.
Yeah.
So. All
right. Anything else to add to that?
Not to that, but I'll say I just posted in the office hours a little link to the README for Renovate TerraGrunt support, and it basically has the same limitation. You can only use registry sources and GitHub sources that include Semver, you can't use custom versioning config, I guess, is what it comes down to. So,
All right, and then so you've covered pretty much everything. I did want to shout out to this one. I think we're going to talk internally at Cloud Posse. I think we're going to maybe look at coming up with our own like AWS utils provider where we can add all these escape hatches that we need because we're constantly blocked by things in the AWS provider. But one thing, we're going through compliance right now with a few companies, and we need to sometimes disable some of the standards, like requiring hardware MFA when we use virtual by design. But there's no way to do that in Terraform right now. So there's a resource for it. It's been around here for like 2 years, or no, like 1 year. But no love yet from HashiCorp on it, and not optimistic about it getting incorporated. So we'd love your upvotes on this issue. If it helps, there's already 41. Let's see if we can double that number.
So 41 means approximately second page, right?
Second page?
Yeah, second page in the priority.
Yeah, or second, I don't know. Honestly, I bet it's not even second, but it's like, 22nd page. I bet there's so many issues. I don't know how many issues they have. Of 572, I bet it's...
No, that's 572 pull requests. They have 3,000 issues.
Yeah, I was looking at the wrong one. Exactly. Of 3,000 issues. All right.
Yeah. Hey, I have to leave. It was good to see you all. And
oh, thanks, Anton. Thanks for stopping by. See you around.
See you around.
Sorry, go ahead. No. I was going to say I had a couple of other announcements of things that I found that I thought was interesting before you do that one. So I saw that today, actually, I think that they released the new load balancer controller 2.2 for EKS. Uh-huh. And it has a whole bunch of neat new features in it.
Does it allow you to use an external load balancer provisioned with Terraform?
It doesn't, but it
will be for.
It doesn't, but it has some better. It says that it has some better performance for security. So I'm assuming that it's easier to opt into WAF and some of the other things that that we would want to do that. Oh no, it doesn't. It doesn't do that. Sorry, not the external one. But it does support. Instance mode targeting for NLBs now, which is kind of cool. So
okay, that's good. Yeah, that's still helpful for us.
Yeah,
and so allow you to select the load balancer by tag, because that's what we really wanted. So we can just provision it by the Terraform. I know there's a feature request for it.
It does now say that you have It does now support externally managed AWS tags, so you can add extra tags onto that through the there as well, so that you can select them.
Yeah, still not probably
not quite there yet, but yeah, I know they've.
All I want to do is Terraform the load balancer with the S3 bucket for access logs, and tie it in with WAF and do enable the what's the DDoS product? I'm drawing a blank. Shield, enable Shield automatically, all that stuff.
Yeah, I hear you. This one is incrementally better according to that, but doesn't do everything that we wanted it to do.
Yeah.
And then my second thing that I saw is a few days ago, WAF itself now supports log filtering. So you can actually tell it selectively what to log after WAF has processed the transaction, basically, or the packet. So you can filter out if you don't want certain things to be logged in your, and it supports all the products that WAF supports, which I thought was kind of cool. If you specifically wanted to log, like, let's say only denies or only allows, or only certain types of things, you now have the ability to
specifically the WAF events, not access.
Correct. WAF events. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Like you can filter out status. Like you can filter out status requests,
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, I have one small thing that's peripherally related, but I just saw today that in, I think it's 338 or something like that, of the AWS provider, you can specify default tags.
You're late to the show, dude.
Sorry, man. My connection was bad. I had to drop off a couple times.
Okay. Yeah, we talked at length about that earlier. But yeah, thanks for bringing it up, by the way. Any other announcements?
I was just curious if anybody had tried that Boundary project. I put the link in the chat.
Let's see.
Boundary?
Yeah, Boundary project. In the Zoom chat.
Oh, sorry.
HashiCorp Boundary. He's talking about.
Boundary. Gotcha. Yeah, we talked about Boundary when it was first announced at HashiConf. We haven't really brought it up that much again. I am a little bit spent on the zero trust arena of products. I've been burned too many times that I'm not giving them fair mind share yet to evaluate them. Product looks cool, haven't evaluated it. Anyone else really kicking the tires yet on Boundary? So our customer, we were recommending for the longest time, and well, we still do recommend it. Just there's a number of features I really want to see implemented, and they haven't implemented them for gravitational teleport. It's a little bit complicated to deploy, which I don't like. Perhaps I think they have now a managed version of teleport we haven't looked at that might simplify it. Most of our customers are bringing up Zscaler or StrongDM as their solutions. And more and more for our customers, I'm really encouraging them to look at SaaS solutions as opposed to fully self-hosted solutions, just because the amount of open source, the amount of code under management is usually overwhelming, that any piece of this technology, especially if on your security front, that you can offload, the better.
Awesome, thanks.
Yeah. But I am curious, no one on the call kicked the tires on Boundary?
I tinkered with it, but I haven't really used it yet.
Yeah. I'm mostly curious is how easy it is to deploy.
On Linux, it was like as a desktop user, it was fairly complicated. Mm-hmm. And it's because like on Windows and Mac, they're kind of spoiled because there's like a key management system under the hood. Whereas in Linux, it's like KDE versus GNOME versus something else. And so it gets and these aren't very well documented, unfortunately. That from Arch Linux has some of the best docs around that area, but it just, you're kind of on your own in the
Hashi. That's the reason to run Linux on the desktop, right?
Yeah, like HashiCorp instructions aren't, they leave a lot out, you know, typically.
I gave up on Linux on the desktop for many of these reasons, and I haven't looked back. But
yeah,
a long time ago.
Well, it keeps coming back because, you know, Windows and Mac seem to find ways to shoot themselves in the foot. So, like, underpowered Macs and buggy Windows. So
it is making a comeback again. I feel like for a few years there, I wasn't hearing it too much now, but now I see a lot of developers again running it again on their desktop. So,
well, yeah, when Apple cuts corners on their hardware, so you know, that's, I don't know how well known that is, but that's why you know, people look at Linux and beefier machines.
Yeah, there's some big limitations there. All right, so the last announcement that I had was just a reminder that
I do have one more. Sorry. EKS EKS supports Kubernetes 1.20 now in the images by default.
Nice.
What's the last thing by default?
I said the EKS images now support Kubernetes 1.20 as the, you know, by default, basically. If you launch a new cluster, that's the last version.
Did you see if what was the upgrade path smooth or?
It looked pretty simple. I know in the, I only did it in the console, and in the console you literally could just say like update and it updated. It worked pretty smoothly. I didn't have any problems, but I also went from like a fairly recent version to 1.20, so I didn't try anything old.
And you're using the node groups, right?
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So it looks like the one thing we need is now something like Dependabot or Renovatebot that can help us bump Kubernetes versions. So we stay on top of that. That'd be cool. All right. Well, finally, I get to my announcement then. Anybody else have any other announcements? Cool things happening in the industry, DevOps, AWS, Google Cloud, whatever related?
Well, I dropped that thing in the Slack channel I came across a week ago.
Let's see here. Yeah, what is this? Sumi?
So, you know, like basically the concept Varnish?
Yeah.
So this is basically like an open source Varnish like caching system that you could sit in front of Trafic, Caddy, Nginx, Apache, and other stuff.
And why would we go with like the number of reverse caching reverse proxies I'm overflowing with in my head. Why do we need another one?
Well, one, this is free and open source.
Yeah, but I mean, Varnish is open source and free, no? And so is Squid, and so is Nginx, and
Well, this also works in conjunction with, like, let's say if you like Trafic and that's your thing you want, this will work in conjunction with that. So it just has, I guess, tighter integration loop then rather than a separate server platform.
Okay.
If anything, there's trade-offs. I mean, you know, like someone might like HAProxy, someone might like Nginx, someone may like Caddy or Trafic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yet another alternative here. Looks like it's in Go, which is nice, and been around for, up to 2 years, looks like, but really most development.
And some of the other things like Squid you mentioned, I don't know like the current status of those, but I remember a lot of these platforms, they didn't upgrade to latest type of protocols like HTTP2 and gRPC unless you paid for like an enterprise version or something like that.
Does this one support gRPC?
Yes, as far as I understand. So,
yeah, we've been bit by that before.
Cool. So a lot of them, when you get into that, you know, like especially microservices these days, everything's like protobuf and gRPC, and you get into a nightmare trying the Kubernetes to load balance it because, and then Yeah, that's a whole.
At first, when you brought this up, I thought it was going to be a solution for us to sit in front of like a Terraform registry or sit in front of Docker registry or something, so we can have faith in the Sembers not changing. Basically, caching the.
I think like if you wanted to contribute to something like that, I think Sonatype Nessus would be a good open source project to target, and those folks are really nice and open for that type of thing.
That's an interesting idea there.
And that would be because if you spearhead it, that you get buy-in support from the company, and then they will adopt it and support it because that's just how they roll. Versus someone, another company, not to mention, would try to upsell you for $30,000 a pop.
Yeah.
Okay, Eric, I'm still not going to let you get to your announcement because I found one other cool thing. I'm posting it in the Office Hours channel. If you just open that up now. This is going to sound really weird, but so AWS open sourced this week and made it general availability, I guess. And it's policy as code, a policy as code engine for CloudFormation, but it can actually run on Terraform plan files as well.
Nice.
Which I thought was pretty interesting.
I suspect internally AWS doesn't use CloudFormation. They use Terraform. Actually, I guess I'm not supposed to mention, but I was at Twitch and they used Terraform. So, and Twitch is owned by AWS, Amazon.
That'd be hilarious.
It's like the proverbial expression, friends don't let friends use CloudFormation.
Yeah.
I can say that I've had meetings directly with the person who's the product owner of CloudFormation at Amazon, and I had some conversations with him, and suffice it to say that far more people use CloudFormation than use Terraform. They have statistics on it, and almost all of their like uber large like customers that you hear Amazon quoting like use CloudFormation to manage it. Maybe not almost all of them, but a lot of them use CloudFormation to manage resources. And like the number of provisions over CloudFormation was like, 40-1 or something versus Terraform at one point. It was something crazy like that. So yeah, maybe it's caught up a little bit, but
And consider the other tools like I believe the SAM CLI and CDK that use CloudFormation on the back end. So even the front end, you're coding in some other paradigm, but on the back end, it's still CloudFormation.
Yeah, serverless framework is one that does that. Yeah.
Then I have a kind of a joke comment on that one. How many people outside of Amazon Cloud, say Google Cloud and Azure, use CloudFormation?
Well, you can. You actually can. You can register external providers just like you can with Terraform. Not that I would advocate doing that, but you can do it if you want.
I didn't know that. That's
interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, but you can.
That's always that way.
Now. That was why I had my meeting with them, actually. That's why I know it. We were talking about developing some external providers for them that did provision some other things.
Gotcha. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, let's not forget that we are in a bubble, right, of other Terraformers and what we see and operate, and that there's a world that exists outside of what we do. The only thing I like about CloudFormation is that it makes the continuous delivery portion of it easier than Terraform. While with Terraform, it's always stuffed up to the company to figure out how to deploy it. All right, my announcement, then if we have any questions, we'll get to those. My announcement is Cloud Posse is hiring DevOps contractors, ideally in North America, US or Canada. If you're pretty senior, you know, reach out, go to cloudposse.com/jobs. Always looking for working with other great people. And sometimes I feel like people put Cloud Posse too much on a pedestal. We do a lot of amazing things, but honestly, everything starts out as crap and it evolves to something better. Sometimes I hear people like, I'm not worthy or something like that. No, you're worthy. Don't worry about it. Just try it out. We're a friendly group to work with and work with all kinds of contractors with different skill sets. So reach out, cloudposse.com/jobs. And Q&A, we only have that much time left for Q&A today, largely because I didn't have much queued up. I didn't see the channel. There was just a small question that was already answered actually in office hours. It was asked like, you know, what's the best way to get Terraform to pick up changes to modules like during local development? You might be pinning to another, you might be in your module, you might be pinning to another module's branch, for example, during development. And then if you do Terraform init, it's not going to pull down those changes necessarily. So there's a command you can run just called Terraform get-update, I believe, and you'll pull in the latest changes.
Yeah, that can save hair if you have it. Because if you don't know that particular thing, you're constantly like removing your Terraform. It's unclean. That's a good one, Eric.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right. Let's see what else was posted here in the channel since I was talking. Drift CTL. Yeah, it's come up. I think we wanted to do a demo of Drift CTL. I forgot. I reached out to the author and suggested we do that, but I haven't followed up. I forgot.
There's someone in the challenge above. When I posted it originally, that it responded, and he's already in the Slack channel. So I think you can probably reach them there.
Yep. No, he's in the Slack team already. And he's answered questions from others on it. I know it's undergoing active development. It's pretty cool. So what Drift CTL is all about, just to bring that up, is you have all this stuff, it's infrastructure as code, but what about all the other resources that are in the AWS account? How do you identify which one of those have coverage inside of your Terraform state file? And it will point out basically where the drift is, what resources were done maybe with ClickOps, but not always ClickOps. Sometimes Amazon will provision resources automatically. For example, if you're using AWS SSO with permission sets, that'll create IAM roles in an account. It'll show you that that is drift. Has anyone given it a shot? I know, Mohammed, you did that early on, but it had a lot of problems at that time. But that was months and months ago.
Eric, can I piggyback on to the Terraform get update thing just really quick?
Yeah, jump on that.
One of the things that I've been using Terraform for, I don't know, years and years and years. And one of the things that I didn't ever realize, I don't know when they snuck it in, but there's this now, there's a Terraform-install-autocomplete. And if you do that, then the next time you launch your shell, you can actually do Terraform tab and it will show you all the available options, or you can do Terraform subcommand tab and it will show you all the available sub options for those things underneath there. And I never knew that existed until just recently. I learned something new.
Yeah,
all the HashiCorp tools that are made in Go have that feature. So what it does is it basically edits your ZSH or bash config to add the completion.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of cool. So if you use another tool like Vault and you want the auto completion, you can do the same thing.
Also, I believe in GDSync, we automatically install all of those. So if you're a GDSync user, you already have the auto complete.
Yeah, I just on my own local machine.
Yeah.
Did that for the first time. I was like, oh, wow, look at this.
Get where we do the completion. don't know. I know we do it somewhere. Cool. Any other questions for everyone on the call today?
That is a small question. So I had an issue, like, say I went from like Terraform 1230 or something like that, some minor version. I upgrade it just a minor version bump because of security. And then I found out, like, when I do a Terraform apply, it wants to recreate the VPC and EKS, which obviously I can't do that because, you know, customers would be unhappy. So I had to revert back to the previous minor version. And I was wondering, is there any way to, like, upgrade the minor version and not have it want to recreate your infrastructure?
Why? Yeah, why would it be trying to recreate your infrastructure? That doesn't make sense.
Well, so between certain minor versions, even like of Cloud Pasta modules, there can be breaking changes.
But it's not the
provider. No, but he's saying Terraform.
The Terraform tool itself.
Oh, shoot.
I upgrade a minor version of that, and then suddenly it wants to recreate my infrastructure when I do apply. And if I'm in the regular version and I haven't updated the state, then it's fine. It sees that those resources are there and won't try to recreate them.
Do you see it literally trying to destroy the resources as well as create them, or is it only trying to create them?
Actually, I think it's only trying to create them. Like, it doesn't
Are you sure that you have remote state set up correctly, or your assumed role to the appropriate?